7654321. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal. Well, hello, out and abouters. Sorry about a little delay there. I had the wrong cord plugged into my computer. I hope somebody didn't receive an electroshock someplace in the library. I saw somebody start out there. Apologies, ma'am. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 or 92.3 FM, also streaming from KYRS.org. And I have with me as my guest today, Liv Hebert Watkins. We'll go with the English pronunciation. Yeah.
How
are you doing, Liv?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Maeve?
I'm doing pretty good. I walked down here, you know, and it's just a nice walk. And
nice.
It was warm. You know, it looked cold out, but I stepped outside and it was warm and it felt good.
So good to be outside in the springtime.
Oh my gosh. It totally is. I mean, even when it rains a little bit. Now, Liv is an artist with... in a lot of different mediums, media, I would guess. And right now you've got an installation at Terrain on Monroe that's till the end of the month.
Yes.
And it's called The Table is Set.
True.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the installation first. Why don't you tell me how you got the idea and what it consists of?
Yeah, so this show consists of many media, like you mentioned. I initially started kind of brainstorming and designing pieces for this body of work back in 2023 and 2024 for my solo senior exhibition for art school. And so a lot of these ideas have been kind of bouncing around in my brain for several years. And so, yeah, the initial creation process, like I said, was several years ago. And then when I moved to Spokane, I hadn't initially sold any of the work because I knew that I wanted to show it again. And so once I started getting plugged into the art community here, I heard about Terrain and knew that they just did awesome work at the gallery space on Monroe. And so I reached out to them. And so, yeah, it's been really fun to, unbox this show again, I guess, and bring it to life. So,
and the theme is set around tables and family.
Yeah.
And community and all that. So when you... You obviously added more pieces to what you did. Did you have to shift what the intent was of your project for art school? Did you kind of like shift that a little bit, or did you keep it the same?
Yeah, most of the body of work kind of has remained the same since coming to Terrain. I've added some pieces to kind of help fit that gallery space a bit better. But yeah, that... like you mentioned, that theme of life around the table, some of those ideas, man, started back a long time ago when I was studying abroad in Costa Rica, which I can get into a little bit more later. But yeah, so I didn't shift the intent or kind of the thesis of my body of work when moving it here. I just kind of was able to open it up again and think, oh, what do I want to add to this? What else do I want to say about this? Just fit the space a little bit better.
So are you kind of just bolstered the intent of
exactly
with new pieces?
Yeah, didn't change any of the core intentions.
Did you have to create any specific pieces to kind of like, oh, you know what, I think this would need... you probably wouldn't have had time to do that, right?
Yeah, you know, I had a couple of months. There was a little bit of bopping around of schedules with when I was going to be showcased at Terrain, and so I had a few months of leeway, and all of the major, like, big installation pieces were already completed because I had to fill a solo gallery space already. And so the things I added were pretty supplementary and I think have ended up being pretty core, and like, I'm really proud of them, but nothing that was like, I don't know, too insane to handle this spring.
Well, this is, so the it started the 1st of May and goes to the end of May.
Yep.
And the Terrain Gallery is open Thursday through Saturday, like 4 to 7 or something.
Yep,
like that.
Yep, that sounds right. Yeah, kind of funky hours, but it works.
Yeah. And so it's kind of, you know, It's kind of interesting. You're kind of at the halfway mark, a little bit past mm-hmm. it. Have you gone in to look at it or be with people other than the opening night of it or anything?
Yeah, opening night was so much fun. I had so many like family from out of town and just friends come out and support, which was just such a blast. It always just feels like a party. Yeah. You're like, this is so fun. And it feels like sharing a piece of me with the Spokane community that... I don't know. I've never gotten the chance to do before, which has been awesome. And then, yeah, I've tried to stop in at least every weekend and say hi to Edward, who works down at the studio. And I've also brought a few friends to see the show. And I've tried to kind of just been encouraging people to keep the flow down there. Yeah, so it's been smart. Fun.
Have you like, once it's installed, are you really good about stepping back and saying, that's the installation. I'm not going to change. You know, you don't start like second guessing.
Yeah, you know, I spent a lot of time, planning out the way I wanted this show to look. You know, obviously, even if you set the same show 10 different times, I mean, it's going to have such a different feel every single time, depending on the gallery. And so, I mean, I've been looking at the dimensions of this gallery for months and redrawing it and resketching out where I want things to be. And so by the time I set it up, and I had some wonderful help from the installation crew at Terrain, and also my dad came to help, which was super kind. And so by the time we got everything up, it was like, it felt really solid. It was like, okay, you know, get the lighting on it. It just looks beautiful. Kind of felt like, okay, I don't need to touch this anymore.
Yeah. Well, how about with your work? Do you find, like, when do you say it's done? You know, how do you, because I'm pretty good about it. When I'm done with a painting, I just go, I have a hard time selling it, but I also go, I'm done. Whatever this is it.
Totally. Yeah, I think it's a hard line to find. I mean, I don't know. Usually, though, I come to this point where I'm like, if I go any further, I might just ruin this thing, especially with paintings. So,
yeah, trimming the mustache, right?
Yeah, seriously. So it's kind of like, okay, sometimes I'll like take a day away from it, like give it space, just sit there and look at it for a while. I feel like with ceramics, there's kind of, because a lot of my show includes ceramic pieces. So I think there's also sometimes a helpful timeline with that where it's like, your clay starts drying out too much. Like at some point you can only do so much to resurrect what you've been working with. And so sometimes that's a bit of a grace to me to be like, well, you have to be done now. So
Do you have a kiln at home?
Good question. No. So like I said, most of the ceramic pieces were done when I was in art school, but I've also gotten plugged into the Spokane Potters Guild here in town. So there's just, there's a lot of awesome, like different community studios. So that's where I fired some pieces more recently, which has been really fun. But
so I was reading in your bio that your parents are both artists. Mm-hmm. So did your dad come in from, you went to school in Duluth, right?
Yeah, Duluth, Minnesota. Good memory.
And then did your dad come in from, was he in Minnesota? Did he come out?
Yeah, my parents are super kind. They didn't need much of an excuse to come see us, which is super sweet. And so, and like I said, they're both artists and my dad loves hanging shows and helping. And so that was just like a really fun excuse of a trip for him to come out and help me. And he's also a painter. And so,
Have they been to Spokane before?
Yeah, they have. Okay. Yeah, they love it. Yeah, they're probably some of the only people that they're like, Spokane is the most wonderful city. I'm like, hey, I love that you guys are so hyped on this. It's awesome.
I love it. I have relatives that come in from Minnesota often. We're not often, but fun. Sometimes. Yeah, so I love showing off our city.
I know.
It's really cool.
It has some similar Minnesota vibes for sure.
It kind of does.
Yeah.
You know, I had my cousin came when I lived on the north side, and he said, why are there no two-story homes?
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, well, we're not in the right neighborhood for that. You know, go up to the South Hill, you see two-story homes.
South Hill feels a lot like Minneapolis, St. Paul.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the parks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, cool. So what kind of art did your mom do?
My mom is kind of a jack of all trades. She, so a huge part of the installation is like this dinner table setting, and it kind of just catches your eye as soon as you walk in, and it's literally set on a table. And so you're forced to circumnavigate that. But my mom actually made the table, which I was going to just use like another table, but she's like a wonderful woodworker and welder. But she also like teaches art to little kids. And so she's also really good at painting and mosaics. And so she's kind of a genius, honestly. So that's a fun little nod to her, is to get to have that table in the show. Cause so awesome.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah.
And so when you were, So you grew up around art your whole life.
Yeah.
And so at what point did you like rebel? Like, you know, I want to be an accountant, anything like that?
Oh God, no. No, I think from a young age, I knew like I was pretty creative and pretty interested in the arts. I remember my parents saying things to me like, you know, like we would visit maybe a cool college or something in town and see an art show. And they were like, you could do this someday. And I kind of remember thinking, oh, maybe. But I was also really interested in like environmental studies. And I don't know, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a marine biologist. So like I had these big ideas, but like, I think I quickly always rerouted and knew that my brain was like so much more creatively driven.
Yeah.
Because math and science was so hard for me. So yeah, I think I was encouraged in that. And then, yeah, as soon as I got older, I started to take art a lot more seriously. So.
Well, you know, that's got to be a real cool thing that you have parents who are artists. And I so know, they didn't say, you can't make a living being an artist.
I know.
and also the cool part of that is being an artist is seeing that you, how to make a living with your art, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a tricky thing.
Totally. Feels like a big puzzle sometimes. I'm still putting the pieces together, but it's been good. And I'm like excited to keep exploring where it can take me.
Well, so when you entered art school, were you primarily a painter at that point, or what kind of art did you do?
Yeah, I actually double majored in Spanish and art, so that was kind of a unique blend that I think kept me in a couple different headspaces, which was actually helpful. But I came in kind of, my primary form of art was honestly probably jewelry. Up until that point, I had a small like jewelry business, and I was getting into soldering, and I think I had made my first gold wedding ring at that point, and I was kind of trying to figure that out. But for some reason going into art school, I thought, oh, I'm going to like drawing and painting the best. And I don't know why I didn't think like jewelry is sculpture. Like I'm probably going to end up liking sculpture the best. So I took this sculpture class kind of, I don't know, maybe like a little begrudgingly. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I love this. Same thing happened with ceramics. And so I think pretty quickly, like freshman year of college, I realized, oh, I really want to like take ceramics seriously, take every ceramics class I can.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to take kind of so many other core classes. So, you know, you obviously have to take your painting and your drawing and your 2D design and all that stuff. But I think like sculpture and ceramics quickly became my favorite, I would say.
Yeah. So when you're working on projects, mm-hmm. at home, do you kind of find yourself working on one thing and then moving on to another? Or do you sort of like, okay, I'm working on this. I'm going to let the paint dry on that. And then mm-hmm. I'm going to work on some jewelry now while that's doing that. Mm-hmm. How do you, what's your work like?
Yeah, kind of depends on the season. Like I said, being an artist feels just like a big puzzle right now. I have like other part-time jobs as well. So I'm not able to 100% allocate all my time to art. And so in this season, at least, I'm doing some teaching. And so, you know, after work sometimes, like I think deadlines are helpful for all of us. And so, you know, I'll have a jewelry commission, so I'll work on that. Or, you know, in this last season before Terrain, you know, I'll have my afternoon free. And so I'll be like, okay, I need to finish, you know, this lamp. Cause I made a couple of lamps for this last show. And yeah, similar, you know, okay, I need to let the lamps dry. So, you know, maybe I'll work on jewelry tonight. So I feel like there's just a constant list going for me, which is, which is kind of cool just to be able to bop around and do stuff. But yeah, probably depends on the season for sure.
Yeah.
How much time I have.
I totally get that. When you, I went on your Instagram page and I was looking at your jewelry and it's really beautiful. How would you describe it if somebody were to ask you, describe your jewelry?
Oh, good question. I would say I primarily work with like silver, enamel, and gold. I would say my jewelry is pretty minimalistic, and I think I try to use like bold colors, simple lines, fun shapes. Like a huge goal of my jewelry is that people can kind of wear it no matter what they're doing and mm-hmm. where they are. And yeah, so I'd say in that sense, it's pretty functional, which is something that I really value.
Yeah.
But I also would say it's like quality and it's high end. And I like to use, you know, semi-precious stones and, yeah, work with materials that are going to last forever. So you should be able to wear it forever. So
yeah, that's cool. And I suppose, you know, you really do have to do something to kind of distinguish your jewelry from other people's jewelry, right? Because, I mean, it seems it's ubiquitous, you know, jewelry out there. Although I think you really hit on something that you get to wear it. And, you know, it's funny when you're selling a painting and you're selling a painting for like, you know, maybe $300 or something. And people balk at that, like, oh, $300. But, you know, they'll go pay $400 for a tattoo.
Totally. Or $400 for a ring or something, you know.
And it's like, you know, this is something that the artist spent at least as much time as a tattoo artist.
Totally.
Probably more. And it's something that you will be able to give away. I mean, you could give your tattoo away, I suppose. You know, I mean, I suppose.
True, a nice birthday gift or something.
Oh, nice. Just flops out of a card.
It's crazy.
But, you know, I mean, I just think it's funny how people, that is the thing that you always have with you. So jewelry is a really cool thing that you.
Walking advertisement.
Yeah, that's true.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that, so if you had to do one, and this is a stupid question, maybe I shouldn't even ask it. Is there one, something that's like your favorite to do as far as?
Such a good question. Man, mixed media is just like the cheater way to say it because that's like, can be everything. But I don't know. I kind of lean towards clay. You can just do so much with it. I remember like my mentor and professor saying to me at one time, she was like, she's obviously encouraging me to like stay more like hooked in the clay program and stuff, but she was like totally in my corner and loved me. And she was just like, dude, she's like, clay is the best. You can do everything with it. You can make sculpture with it. You can paint on it. You can do printmaking on it. Like you can do all these different processes and take the experimental side of it so far, that I don't know, like I truly think it can never get old. So
yeah.
I don't know.
And that's something you can make functional things too.
Yeah, totally.
Clay, right? I mean,
yeah. And that was like, that was super fun in my process for this show too, was all of the imagery on the table setting. It all like started as drawings in my sketchbook. And so as I was kind of thinking about what sort of imagery I want to put on these plates, on these cups, I just started drawing things and then put it into like a digital form, scanned them out, made stencils, and then I carved all the imagery onto the plates. And so that was such a cool process to be like, oh, this is, you know, I've done like throwing clay on a potter's wheel and I've done drawing. And then I've essentially done like this printmaking process where I'm carving away using a technique called Sgraffito onto the clay body itself. And so it was, yeah, it's so cool how all those different methods can just come full circle.
Yeah, that is really cool. And that's, you know, that is really good that you I guess, when you're dealing with clay, you're going to have to do some pre-planning, right?
Totally.
Not like with a canvas, you know? Yep. I mean, I'm really bad. Sometimes I'll sketch things out or I'll mock things up. Like I just did this painting with a turkey vulture with a rose in its mouth.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. That's and awesome. It's flying over Finch Arboretum.
Oh,
so,
awesome.
Yeah. So, but it's like, well, I kind of need to have a turkey vulture over Finch Arboretum. So I combine the two. So when people are looking at me paint it, they're like, did you take that picture? I'm like, well, no.
Not yet.
I didn't. I made this picture.
Did you do that at the Finch Arboretum event? The paint, or what was it called?
It was called Forest to Frame.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. I heard about that.
Yeah, it used to be a Brush on the Bluff.
Okay, cool.
But I think it just got too big, you know. Yeah, you should go out and do it. It's fun because you want to do your stuff. You want to get really far on it before you go out there because people talk, they just talk to you.
Oh, that's so awesome. What a cool event.
It's really cool. People talking to you and then you have like a week, not about 5 or 6 days to finish things up before you turn it into the gallery.
Oh, so cool. What a great event.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And so anyway, yeah. So look next year.
Yeah.
Next year. I'll send you a link to it if
that's
you're interested.
Awesome.
Yeah. But I'm not very good about pre-planning these things.
It's hard to do for anyone.
Yeah, but I would say with clay, you would have to do that, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So how about, are there some media? Oh, actually, you know what? I got to do my 20-minute after the hour business. I got to play some stuff here.
Nice.
And then we'll come right back.
Business first.
I haven't even asked any of the questions that I have typed out here. But when we come back, I do this thing where I talk about where the protests are. That's something I do at the after the 20
minutes. Yeah, awesome.
So we'll do that, and I'm going to play a little music. And if you know what I'm going to play? I'm going to play a little Green Warriors with a special collaboration with the Green Warriors and the poet Nick the Beat. Here we go.
Oh, so tight. They think they know that they're the best and feel the slightest slight. The garden queens, the chosen ones, they don't know when to stop. The only clown who makes them smile is Comic Carrot Top. Pick and pluck and turn the nut and twist it oh so tight. The carrots won't leave the ground without an awful fight. They look so clean and oh so bright and never ever soiled. Commerce takes too long, I want to see them all get boiled. They tell us all to wait, they'll turn real sweet once it gets cold. When all of us have all been picked and some are growing mold. Carrot cake and carrot juice and carrot raisin salad. They'll hate me and my rhyme because it's not a ballad. My name's Nick the Beat, I am real neat, that is what I said. Some clowns call me beat down, but I'm Detroit Dark Red. I don't try hard, I'm a genius bard, hang with me for a while. My face is scarred and like Swiss chard, I compost upon a pile.
And About receives support from Eastern Washington University, the region's polytechnic, offering an increased emphasis on real-world, hands-on learning to build career-ready skills and a lifelong community. More information at ewu.edu.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for May 18th to the 21st. Monday, Jerry Lee Raines at The Parlor, Tristan Hart Pierce at Zola, Ron Green at Maryhill, Texas Ketamine at The Big Dipper, and the Mac Movement open mic with Probably John at The Big Dipper. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, James Berkeley at 1919 Wine Cellar, Ron Crescioni at The Osprey, and Jameson Sampson and the All-Star Jam with Jerry at Zola. Wednesday, Austin Carruthers at Iron Horse in the Valley, Shelby Natasha and Akifumi Kato at Zola, Littlefoot, Yes Ma'am, and One Man Train Wreck at The Big Dipper, open mic with Derek Hart at The Checkerboard, and the Downtown Get Down Jam at The Red Room. Thursday, Robert Vaughn at Arborcrest, Justin Priest at the Steam Plant, the Johnson Brothers Blues Jam at Chan's Red Dragon, the Dirty Champions at PJ's, open mic with Derek Hart at the Alibi, and Jason Perry at the Social. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Independent media is more important than ever. In a world where local stations are being gobbled up by corporations and religious programming, community stations like KYRS are rare and precious. Support independent media by donating at kyrs.org.
All right, we are back. And that, of course, was the Green Warriors with Nick the Beat doing Carrots, Clowns, and Commerce, which you've got carrots in your show.
Nice pull.
Yeah. So you've got like carrot mobile, I guess, hanging carrots. Talk yes. about those a little bit. What yeah. inspired you to do carrots?
Yeah, those are so fun. Those are definitely very eye-catching. Everyone's like, what's with all the carrots? yeah, for context, there's about like 20 like large hanging ceramic carrots. I think the biggest one is like, I don't know, like 2.5 feet long. Wow. So they're pretty significant. And yeah, couple of things with those. First of all, I just like love carrots. I think they're so fun and awesome. And so I don't know, that feels like enough of a reason in and of itself. But also, I guess kind of the intent of this show, again, life around the table, this idea of making the simple acts holy and like drawing attention to the beauty of simplicity at a table. So a lot of, I guess, I don't know, through thinking through that sort of idea, I wanted to take like simplistic imagery and draw attention to it and literally just like enlarge it, make it a big deal.
Yeah.
And so carrots for me was one of those things where I was like, well, I'm going to, you know, find these on my dinner plate and I'm talking about the table. And so let's just make 20 carrots. It started off by making like a couple, but my mentor at the time was like, oh, we got to amp this up. You got to keep going. So yeah, just literally kept making them.
And each one looks like each one has a little bit of a different personality.
For sure. Yeah. Some are a little more orange, some are a little more yellow, some are a little more purple. And yeah, they're all different sizes too, which is super fun. So, yeah.
And it, you know, and it all kind of comes back to the table. You've got great portraits there. You've got cool paintings and lots of ceramic stuff and like ceramic dishes and serving ware and things like that. Mm-hmm. What's your table like at home?
Oh, great question. Well, the table in the show is my dining room table. So currently I'm eating off of like a plastic, you know, U-line table or something. Okay. But when that table's at my house, I would say in general, it's a little bit quieter. It's just my husband and I, which is sweet. We like to have people at our table as much as possible. So we frequently have like guests coming to stay with us. So yeah, we just had like family and a couple of different friends in town last month. Yeah, we really like to eat meals at the table, have people over. I think the more full it feels, I think the better it feels oftentimes.
Yeah. And after COVID, it was kind of hard, you know, to get back into that groove, right?
Totally. Because it's such a normal human experience for everyone. And it's so unifying and it's so universal.
Yeah.
It's a really wonderful place.
To eat a meal together. And, you know, I find now that we're empty nesters, our table starts to just accumulate stuff.
Totally.
So we have like one
it's
corner.
It's so funny how that happens.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not really sure what to do with this. I'm going to stick this on the edge of the table.
Yep.
And then, yeah, and then we have to play a game or something or eat dinner. But now we're eating outside. You know what I forgot to do is I forgot to talk about what's going on this week for the protest stuff because I just got all discombobulated here.
Hey, it's all
okay,
good.
I'm going to. So all these you can find on saveusa.me. That's M-E. Or go to Spokane Indivisible and you can check out their Substack, which is really awesome too. So I'm just going to quick go through this. There is EWU's Genders, Women's and Sexuality Studies program. There is a petition to sign there. I'm sure you could just probably Google EW Gender, Women's and Sexuality Study to find that petition. Support the Spokane 3. That trial starts May 18th. And if you're up in the news, you know about that. The whole ICE deal with that. You can go to pgels.org to find out more about that. We have Mikey Mondays every Monday at 18th. And that is to draw attention to our absentee House of Representatives, Mr. Baumgartner. And that is May 18th, 3 to 4 p.m. at Division and Ruby at the V in front of Wendy's. Get the ice out Wednesdays. Hey, that's on Wednesday. May 20th and every Wednesday following 1 to 3 p.m. corner of Washington and Cataldo at that ICE downtown field office. And there is the Golden Pizza, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, groundbreaking ceremony. And that is on Thursday, May 21st at 2 p.m. at the new grounds for the Salish School, which will be at 2720 West Elliott. And the Picha is a ground digging, a root digging tool of the Salish people. Spokane Visibility Brigade is war only, benefits billionaires. You can see them on the overpasses at I-90. 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. You can join them. Freedom to Vote Friday, the Supreme Court guts voting rights. That is put on by the Eastside Gladiators, North Hamilton and East Trent. And we'll come back to, of course, end things with Say It Saturdays, Blame the Billionaires. That is our mini No Kings protest. It takes place every week at the corner of Garland and Division. And you can see that. And if you like Nick the Beat has a little book of poetry, a little zine called Beatitudes. And it is $3. And you can go to my website, mavegriffith.com. I'm helping Nick the Beat out with that. And you can scroll down to the Nick the Beat project. That $3 is going to go to support the Pride Festival that is coming up in June, coming up really quickly. So, all right. Thank you. Thank you so much for indulging me.
I love it.
With that. Yeah. We just have to do that every week. And some weeks I do forget. Okay. And for those who are just joining me, I'm talking to Liv Hebert Watkins, the artist who is doing the Table Is Set installation at Terrain. And how do people find out more about that? Or I guess they just go there, huh?
Yeah. Show up at the Terrain Gallery on Monroe Thursday through Saturday, 4 to 7. Otherwise, the Terrain website has ton of good information. You're going to find their hours, their location, address, all that good stuff, as well as like all the other artists that are going to be.
How do people follow you and keep up with your art and jewelry and
show
all that
up.
Stuff?
I have a website. It's mostly where I show my jewelry stuff. It's called froglegstudio.com. However, I also post about my show and other like ceramic stuff I've been keeping up with. So my Instagram is Frogleg Studio. So
and how did you come up with that name?
I know, it's so fun. I was kind of doing a rebrand with my jewelry a bit back and I was trying to think of, I don't know, initially I was like, oh, I'm going to use my name, but I don't know. There's probably like 100 different jewelry companies that have the name Liv in it. So I was like, scratch that. Yeah. I want to be identifiable and I want to stand out. And I've always been obsessed with frogs. And I was like, oh, this is kind of a funky, weird name to go along with like high-end jewelry or art.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of went with it. I was like, it's a little bit random, but I think it suited me really well. And it's pretty easy to remember. So
yeah, that's a huge benefit. Yeah, that's really cool. How did you come to Spokane? How did you come here from?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I finished art school in Duluth, Minnesota. And at the time, I was in a long-distance dating relationship. And then we got engaged. So I was like, well, we should probably live close by. So I moved out to Spokane a couple of years ago. And my husband and I are now married.
Was there any kind of like, no, you should move here. No, you should move here. Any of that?
You know, honestly, no. I think after I was done with school, I was like, I kind of want to get out of my college town. Like, I love it, but I wanted to move west. And so there was just a lot more pull. I was like, I don't really have a job yet. You have a full-time job. All the things started like lining up and I was like, yeah, it doesn't really make sense for me to try to get you back to Minnesota because I don't really want to stay here right now either. So
yeah, it's a little bit warmer here.
It is a little bit. Yeah. Winters are a lot better, but yeah. I don't know. I can't complain too much though. Cause I really love Minnesota winters, but they are brutal.
I love the boundary waters too.
Oh yeah. They're so beautiful. So they're dealing with some forest fires right now.
Yeah. And I hear that the Trump administration is trying to open it up for mining.
Yeah. Heartbreaking is the least of the words I could say about it.
It's just like they go out of their way to just mess stuff up. It's like no benefit at all, but let's just make people angry and mess up their stuff.
Yeah, Minnesotans are pretty furious. I think Minnesota.
I love, I'll tell you what I loved about Minnesota. My cousins were really involved in the, and all the protests and stuff while ICE was there. And I just think that it kind of goes, and this will maybe circle back to art, hopefully.
Love it.
Is that they don't, these folks, the MAGA folks and the people who support this don't understand why people would do something that doesn't bring them a personal benefit,
hmm.
Doesn't bring them money or bring them power. So I think it really confounded them that Minnesotans, because they're honorable, something else that they don't understand, they're honorable people. They went out to protect their neighbors.
Hmm. Yeah, you know? When it was negative 40.
Yeah, negative 40. Yeah, they sent me pictures and it's like, it just bamboozles them. They don't get it. They'll say, oh, they're obviously they're paid agents or whatever, because they would never do anything like that.
Yeah.
So I love Minnesota too.
I know. They really have stayed strong and I think like been really good neighbors to each other as well, which has been very encouraging to see from afar. It's been hard to be away, but
yeah. And it's been good because it shows us all a little game plan too.
Yeah, totally.
You know, which is hopefully we won't have to use, but we might, you know, mm-hmm. you never know.
Yeah.
What are your daily practices for art? Do you have anything like, is it just pretty much driven by pieces that need to get done for commissions or things that you plan on marketing, or how does that work?
The well-balanced, I think, creative juices flowing version of myself that's like maybe a little more calm, cool, collected would be like, yes, I journal every day and I just try to do things that keep me loose and excited about creating and try not to, you know, stress myself out or anything. That's like one side of me that sometimes operates, but I think like more consistently, like I said, with my other job as a teacher, I think I'm a little bit more motivated by some deadlines.
Yeah.
But I have been lately, like I have an accountability best friend back home in Minnesota and we've been trying to keep each other accountable with how can we maintain like healthy practices as artists to prevent burnout. And I think journaling has been one of those things that yeah. I've been really trying to get a lot better at lately. And also just keeping like play at the center of what I do.
Yeah.
And so carving out spaces to play and to draw without maybe intent or an end goal. So kind of keep that space sacred and then also obviously keep grinding on the projects or the concepts that need to happen. And ideally those kind of feed each other
yeah.
and benefit each other. I'm trying to not swing so hard, but yeah, a little bit of both. Maybe a little journaling and some deadlines probably is where I'm at.
Yeah, that journaling's pretty key, I think. Do you have like an artist community here that you're kind of do things with, or a artist posse, so to speak?
Yeah, I definitely think because I've only been here for a few years, I'm still kind of figuring that out.
Yeah.
Getting plugged into Terrain, though, has been cool. I sell some yeah. jewelry at From Here as well, which is one of their little
yeah,
storefronts yeah, in the mall that sells yeah. all art from local artists, which has been super cool. So, yeah, trying to get myself involved where I can. But, yeah, maybe don't have as core of a community of, like, deep friendship and also deep creativity than I did back in Minnesota. So I'm kind of
yeah.
keeping ties there, but also trying to find it here too.
The good thing about Spokane, it's not like Portland or Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be a native Spokane person
totally.
in the next couple of weeks. You know, it just doesn't take very long.
That's awesome.
I think, how about do you go and intentionally kind of fill your tank by looking at other artists' work or reading books or things like that?
Yeah, totally. Reading is such a fun one because it's such a creative outlet. I'm not personally like a writer necessarily, or like that's not something I seek out, but like reading still just fills my tank for other creative works, I guess.
Yeah.
Love going to art museums. We just went over to Seattle recently and went to a bunch of just different galleries and went to some amazing native art galleries, and it was just so wonderful. Terrain is also a good excuse to do that too, because there's a new artist there every month, which is yeah. so cool. And the Mac is such a great resource.
The Mac is really good for
yeah.
that.
Oh my gosh. Did you go see the exhibit with that native glassblown artist?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It literally
was incredible.
Blew my mind.
What I really liked about that, I mean, of course, the visuals were so, I mean, they were the pieces themselves were so moving.
Yeah.
But the installation
oh my gosh.
With the sound and the light, to me, I said, is it possible to buy the soundtrack to this installation? And they said it wasn't.
Oh, bummer.
They said, well, I'll give you, you know, they gave me a link, which, you know, was nice of them, but I figured I would come up empty handed. Cause I really do, when I have the opportunity, I like to put it all together with sound and light and the work. And to me, that was just like a home run. That was beautiful.
Yeah, it's such a good example of how many different media you can use to fill a space, to create an environment. I mean, the storyline too is so key. I think that's something as like consumers of art, depending on how involved in the art scene that you are, I think you can sometimes take for granted. You go in, you're like, oh, that's, you know, one individual cool piece. That's one individual cool piece. But when you see an entire, you know, exhibition, whether it's solo or collaborative, and there's a cohesive storyline, I mean, yeah, it's just so impressive. It's just absolutely wonderful. I think that's what makes such a cool, cool exhibit. I just couldn't believe it. I was like,
I went and saw it twice, in fact, because I was just so, you know, it's like, well, this is going to be gone.
Yeah.
So I better go see it.
Yeah. Spokane got lucky with that one. That was awesome.
Yeah. It was really beautiful. Yeah. There's a good community of glassblowers on the west side too.
Yeah, totally. For sure.
Yeah. Right now, I mean, it seems like art, and maybe, you know, maybe I'm being a little self-aggrandizing here, but it seems like art has never been more important than it is right now. You know, I mean, how do you feel when you're doing the work? Do you feel like, because looking at your installation, it tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that when you go in to something like that, it's like, it's everybody's own story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you have your story when you made it and you put it together, but they have their story when they look at it and they have that conversation that with real things that were made with real hands, not AI, not slop, not made up stuff, but came from someone's soul and their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like it's more important now than ever, or how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good question. I think it's so interesting. I think the way like art tracks throughout history, I mean, just thinking back on some of my art history classes, even like, it's just so telling of what is going on in a cultural moment. I mean, you can look at art from, you know, several different centuries and throughout the millennia, and it totally tells the story of, you know, what is happening. And I do feel like right now we are in a moment where I think art is being appreciated in a cool way and communities are showing up for each other. And I think, it's able to provide a lot of unity. I think it's also a way that people are able to express themselves and to tell a story, that can reach a lot of different audiences. I think art is really powerful in that way. And I do think it's needed. I think, man, in the past couple of years alone, there's, you know, so much art that can be made about how people are feeling and what they've experienced in their communities, within their households, you know, and nationally, internationally, you know, there's just so much. I do think there is something about, this moment that we're in that does make art feel really important, at least for me.
I think there's also on the consumer side of it that there's a real hunger for it too. You know, when I go to the museums, I think I've never seen them with more people than I have in the last couple of years. And I think we're all striving to have something real, and there's a touchstone of reality and continuity, I think, with that as well, that we get. And plus there's some great protest art that comes out that's really fun. A book that has stayed with me a long time was a book called Paper Bullets. And it's a true story about these two women. They're lovers and they live in Paris, but then they go to the Isle of Guernsey, I think it is. Oh, is that the name of it? Anyway, or Jersey.
There is a Guernsey island too.
Either Jersey or Guernsey, but they go to that island and it's actually under the English control. So they're okay for a while. This is during World War II. And so, but of course the Nazis take it over. Well, they're both artists. So they start contemplating ways to fight the Nazis by doing artistic things.
Oh, cool. Wow.
And in the end, you know, they, one of them does get arrested and is pretty close to being executed by the Nazis and the war ends.
But, yeah. Wow.
But yeah, but it's like, you know, there is that, I think going back to like being an honorable person and doing things, we like to make people feel good and we like to make people feel happy or make people hopefully give them something to chew on, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think artists do that. And I think, you know, hopefully that's what people go and see when they go to the show at Terrain.
Totally. Yeah. I think also on like the positive side, I hate to say this, the positive side of COVID, that sounds crazy, but, I think it did encourage folks to like support local businesses and start like thinking a little bit more localized as well, which I don't know. That's another thing that I'm like, oh, I think that has changed our tone a little bit on how we consume art and just being willing to consume art, which is important.
It is. And when you go to the Terrain show in October, it's an incredible amount of people.
I know. I'm so excited.
It's just so, just incredible. I only submitted a piece 1 year.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it was fun to see it there with everybody else's stuff. Cool. Yeah. But,
so encouraging. So fun.
Yeah. It is really, it is fun. And you see people really enjoying art, you know, and I think that we're, you know, part of being human, you know?
Yeah. Right? That's awesome. I know. I've been out of town the last couple of years for that event. So,
yeah, I didn't go last year.
Make sure I'm in town this
year. Maybe I'll have something in it this year, too.
Yeah, I know. I would like to look into that.
It's awesome. So you kind of talked a little bit about your time in Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to kind of come back to that. Let's talk about that a little bit. How did that inform your artwork when you were in Costa Rica?
Yeah, Costa Rica was a super interesting space. This was, spring semester of 2023. And as a Spanish major, I really knew I wanted to live in a Spanish-speaking country. I wanted to live with a host family. I wanted to kind of put myself in this, I don't know, uncomfortable space, I guess, this minority space. Yeah. And it was wonderful. I lived with an absolutely incredible host family. I'm like still in contact with them, still in contact with my roommate, which is awesome. She's from Arizona. But yeah, that time was kind of a pause on everything to me that was normal, a part of my rhythms, my routines, all my to-do lists. And I knew that it was going to be a sweet space to just kind of do some of that intake, like we talked about, some of that reset as an artist. And so I started journaling a lot and sketching a lot and thinking ahead at this point, okay, you know, what do I want to work on for my show? And it was also just a really hard season. Just transitions, I think, are harder on others than some, but I didn't know anyone there. And I got pretty, just like lonely and sad. And, my host mom was just incredibly kind. And the table just quickly became this space of like, okay, I'm having a terrible day. Cause you know, I just wish I could leave even though this place is awesome. I just feel such an out of body experience. This table, it just became so grounding. It's where we had dinners and breakfast every day. Cause that was kind of part of our deal. We lived with them and we had these, you know, family meals, which was so sweet. And, you know, started playing Uno at night and also started, you know, calling my mom crying at the table back home, like all these different experiences. And it just kind of started stirring in me this kind of simple notion, yet also felt really profound of like, yeah, the table is a space where we just experience so much life. And it doesn't really matter if you're from Minnesota or if you're from San Jose, Costa Rica, like, yeah, it's a human experience and it's just so universal. So yeah, that's kind of where some of the inspiration, I guess, began was during that season.
And I would imagine just that, outpouring of empathy from your host family.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And, cause I think that's another part about being an artist too, is being empathetic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I mean, you can't really, you really do have to look at, cause you're looking at perspective and you're stepping into other people's shoes, this other, whatever your subject is and all that. And I think that must've been really fortifying for your art.
Yeah, it was. It was so awesome. And I think I felt encouraged in that space too. I grew up around a table that I think for the most part felt really safe and inviting and beautiful. And I think kind of ideal in some ways. And I think that space in Costa Rica also felt that way. And that's like my hope for others as well, that the table could be this beautiful space. But the reality is too, there's also like a lot of heartbreak at the table. And so throughout the show, there's imagery of, you know, faces that maybe like, I guess, seem joyful to some extent, but others, there's like a lot of tears, in the imagery on the table. Real hard things happen there as well, which is, just truth.
Yeah, it's truth. And what a gift that must have been to be able to do that. Was that in college that you went and did that, or was it?
Yeah, that was in college. So I was taking some Spanish classes there. I also did like a mural painting class, which was awesome.
Cool, yeah.
Mostly Spanish though. It was pretty cool. My host family didn't speak any English, and so I was, deep in it. It was awesome.
I love the kind of political art too that comes out of Central and South America.
Yeah,
you know, especially murals and stuff.
Yeah,
like
murals
that.
Are really powerful and bold. I think they're. There's definitely, it felt cool to take a class on that there. And we got to actually make a mural in a neighborhood that we lived in.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, I mean, I don't know if or when I would love to, but go back to that neighborhood, but it'll be cool to be like, wow, I don't know. I got to paint something there. It's so cool.
That would be, I wonder if it's still up.
Yeah, I think it is.
I bet it is.
It was huge. It was on the side of, it was technically, I think it might've been technically private property, but it was someone's house that was adjacent to a park.
Okay.
And they let our class paint on the side of this wall or house or whatever it was. Kind of crazy. But
yeah, that's cool stuff. What do you think's going to be your next, what's your next installation? Are you have something in mind going yet or anything percolating?
Such a good question. I'm definitely in like a bit of a transition space. This is my last year, teaching. I work at an outdoor school. And I'm really, I think for some of the first time starting to carve out maybe an intimidating amount of time to dedicate towards art. Yeah. So this summer and fall, a couple of like things I really want to keep digging into my jewelry business. I have absolutely been loving that. And that's been really fulfilling. I'm also excited, I guess, to make a long story short, there's nothing in particular that I'm like, oh, you know, this is my next deadline for an installation or whatever. But I think showing this show in particular for a second time,
Did you hear that come over?
Yeah, I was like, what is that?
You know what? That's weird. I just got I just got...
It's like, how is my phone going to the speaker?
That's weird, yeah.
That's crazy. Huh, okay. Anyway, I was just saying, displaying the table as set again, I think has felt like a lot of good closure where I'm, ready to move on. I'm ready to start something new. So,
yeah.
TBD on what that exactly looks like, but yeah, it's going to be, I think, fun.
And will you announce... I know you do your website for your jewelry. Are there other things on there that you're going to like explore as paintings and things like that?
Yeah,
that people can
I think
look
that's
at?
That's kind of part of my reset too, is kind of figuring out how and if to marry the different kinds of art that I do in terms of like, you know, a business side and a portfolio side.
Yeah.
And so right now the jewelry is a little bit separate. And this kind of installation work, this ceramic work is, I think, finding its home. So this summer it needs to settle a little bit.
Well, that's the thing, I guess, as a working artist, you have to like wear so many different hats, right? I mean, you have to think about what, you know, if you're making something, you want to sell it and all that, you know.
You know, it is a lot of hats for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's let people know one more last time about the show, Setting the Table, how they can go see it and how they can visit you on your website or on Instagram.
Yeah, I'd love it. You can go see the show, The Table is Set. It's my solo exhibition at the Turing Gallery on Monroe. It'll be up for a couple more weekends till the end of May. And that gallery is open from 4 to 7, Thursday through Saturday. If you go on the Terrain website, there's tons of information there. As well as some of my personal information, I have a website called Frog Leg Studio. Like I said earlier, it primarily has a lot of my jewelry work, but you can also find my contact information and my Instagram, which is also Frog Leg Studio. And on my Instagram, I have a lot more posted about the show and try to do some behind the scenes stuff too, which is pretty fun. So
very cool. Well, Liv, it was wonderful talking to you.
Yeah, great to be with you too, man.
And we'll do this again, as I'm sure there's going to be more stuff to talk about.
It's awesome. Thanks so much.
Yep, you bet. All right, everybody, you were listening to Out and About, and you are listening right now to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM, and we're going to rejoin our feed right now.
AI smart tools, it's easy to forget that we humans once relied on dumb hand tools like saws, drills, screwdrivers, and wrenches. For decades, a major maker of these trusty instruments has been a company in New Britain, Connecticut, appropriately named the Stanley Works. Today, having taken over other big brands like Craftsman and Black & Decker, Stanley is a $15 billion a year conglomerate. And many former workers are asking, Stanley Works for whom? That's because corporate top executives have quietly orchestrated a decades-long move of Stanley factories out of our country, abandoning the skilled machinists who literally made the brand successful. The final blow comes this week, when Stanley will shut down the last of its red brick factories in New Britain. An odd move, since workers there produced one of Stanley's most iconic products, the PowerLock tape measure. It is enormously popular. Indeed, I have two of them. Yet corporate bosses claim that cheaper foreign-made tape measures now dominate the market, so poof, goodbye, 300 American jobs. But wait, Stanley did not eliminate the jobs. It just moved them to Thailand, where labor is paid 75% less than in Connecticut. Indeed, the major foreign competitor to Stanley turns out to be Stanley. It has been building modernized production facilities in Thailand, even as it divested in U.S. factories and increased shipments of foreign-made tape measures to the U.S. This is Jim Hightower saying, Stanley's CEO was paid $7.6 million last year. Nice, but now the paychecks of 300 workers can be reallocated to global shareholders and give another hike in the chief's